Right now, it is time once again to bring in the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack, Tim Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys. You can find them at tqag.com. That is Treasure Quest Appraisal Group. And also right here on a Tuesday morning on Robinhood Radio. Morning, guys.
Hey, good morning. It's just one of us today.
What happened to Greg? I thought I saw him up there.
He's under the weather. He has no voice. Oh. And he has one of those summer colds that really has attacked his vocal cords. Yep. And he has the cough and the croup. And so he's off to the doctor. Actually, he's got an 8 o'clock appointment. So,
well, you have to hermetically seal him in a room. So
I know. I cannot get sick. I said, stay away from me. Stay away. I've been popping vitamin C and just making sure that he's okay. I'm like, here, take your Delsim. Don't cough. But don't get me sick.
You got to get those little masks that they wear in China.
I know. Yes.
No, you don't, because he'll get really mad at you then.
I know. That would not be good.
Well, anyway, so where do we stand? Any big stories out there that I should know about?
There are two really big things. Last Thursday, there was supposed to be a sale of a Caravaggio painting. This was the one that we brought up a couple weeks ago that was found in the attic. This is the one that was a previously unknown piece that they didn't know where the whereabouts was, and it's called The Unveiling of Judith, and it's from 1607, and it's one of the pieces that was found in the attic. We talked about it. It was rolled up there. They had experts were very excited about finding this piece. It was consigned to an auction house in France, and it was going to be sold last Thursday. But the piece was pulled from the auction because the auction house received a private offer, and they wanted to remain confidential, and so the piece was pulled, and there's speculation that the private offer was in upwards of $150 million, which would be a record for the artist, definitely. But also they wanted to keep it not only confidential, but I think that the piece is going to be part of a retrospective on Caravaggio that they are mounting for 2020. And that was part of the deal, is that if he were to purchase it, that it had to be part of this retrospective because whatever museum was putting it together. So there's speculation that it could be somebody who is buying it for a museum. My guess is that somebody is buying it. They're going to put it in this retrospective, and we're going to see it in 5 years, and it's going to come up, and it's probably going to sell for a whole lot more.
Now, can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
It was listed to be auctioned off, right?
Correct.
All right. Now, does the auction house get anything seeing as they pulled it?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I'm sure that they were fielding the offers on behalf of the client. And in this case, this is something that it happens, but it is rare. And in this case, what the auction house would do is that they would be working as agent for the client. And they would still get a commission, and they would still, because they were helping this client field those offers. This piece received so much publicity because of it, being found in an attic. It had just this wonderful, mysterious kind of story behind it. And I think people want to buy into that, and they do enjoy that. And yeah, so the auction house, I'm sure, was covered, and I'm sure the family who found this, they're like, yeah, sell it, because I think that they were going for, it's one of those things, and it's hard to advise clients. It just depends on what the offer is. Without knowing the offer, it's hard to say. But if you received an offer of $150 million, I'm like, yeah, let's take it, a bird in the hand. Let's take the money and run. Could it have sold for more? Possibly. But here's a sure thing. It's like that game show with all the briefcases. Okay, you have this money, but do you want what's behind door number one? No. When you get to $150 million, I'd take the money.
I'll tell you what, I'll take the money at $50 million.
at $1 million, I would be like, okay, let's go. But that's an interesting thing, and that doesn't happen that often. Another interesting thing that happened, again, this is just auction results from last week. There was another auction company that was selling some, you know, just a grouping of decorative arts. And there was one piece. It was a Russian vase, Russian pottery vase, and it had some just wonderful markings. Not very big piece. It's like eight, I think it was 6 or 8 inches in height. Unknown manufacturer. They had it estimated at $600 to $900, but it must have been something that attracted a number of bidders because, according to the article, there were many bidders, not only in the room, but also online. And as an auctioneer, I love that. When I'm auctioneering and you have a number of people that are interested on the phones, on the internet, in the room, and absentee bids and people are clamoring over this piece, it ended up selling for $141,450, wow, which is 157 times the high estimate. So it's one of those things that either, and you know, it's like either it's a really rare piece that people, especially the catalogers, they had no idea of what the piece was, or it's a piece that has some sort of, because of its rarity and some sort of background, that's why a number of people recognize that. And so many people, I'm sure when they put the catalog out, they probably received a number of inquiries about what is this piece? I mean, that I just love. And a lot of times, you know, this is the great thing about auction is that auction houses, when pieces come in, they may be, okay, it's a decorative piece. We know it's Russian. Here's what it is because of this particular mark, but it's not really a known potter or, you know, because of it not being known and maybe just being of its rarity. People go crazy. They go crazy bidding. And especially for the collectors of this sort of thing. And again, it goes down to, you just never know what people want to collect and what they're going to pay at the end of the day. So those were two big things. And last week I was in Montana. I was telling you I was going out to Montana, found some, there were some nice restaurants, and flew over in the Glacier National Park is actually where I was. That's where I flew into. And I was right around. Beautiful area. But this was a case of doing, it was an estate appraisal. And going through, it's interesting, being in a whole different part of the country, the Western art and the cowboy art. I went into, actually, I had some time after my appraisal, so I went into a consignment shop that was there. And I walked in, and it was, their slogan outside was, Western and cowboy and cowgirl chic. Okay. So I walked in and I said, okay, look at this. There's some, yeah, a lot of Western art and just like stuff to put in your log cabin, basically. But the interesting thing that I found was a lot of the sofas and chairs, the everyday stuff that I had just looked at in this estate appraisal and that I see even here down in South Florida, the values that they had marked for sofas and chairs and tables and different things was pretty comparable. You know, it's pretty much the same. It's used furniture all around the country. And I love doing that when I'm in a different part of the country, is take a look at that and see, yeah, it's pretty universal, you know, for that standard sofa, chair, table, in good condition, but it's still used furniture. And it just was something that I like because it reaffirms what I've been doing and valuing things for the last couple of years.
Well, when you talk about looking at a state, I think a lot of people tend to think of Montana as, Montana is just nothing but cowboys and cowpokes and stuff like that. But
yeah,
wealthy people go to Montana a lot. I can tell you that. It is a spot that is highly trafficked, and it's no different, really, when you talk about people going to visit on vacations or to rest or to get some excitement than people that come to Connecticut and New England. It really is an amazing place.
Oh, it was a beautiful place, and there's so much to do. And, you know, especially coming from Florida, where it's been just so warm and humid and everything, we had a hailstorm. I woke up and it was 50 degrees in the morning, and the high was 68. You know, it was just really, the sun was out. And of course, it's Montana. It's big sky.
So I was going to say big sky country.
Just beautiful. Yes. Well,
also, beautiful. Like, coming from Florida where there's no background to going to Montana where there's nothing but background.
Yeah, I know. Quite a distinction. Yeah, very different.
I mean,
enjoy it.
The tallest mountain in Florida is man-made at Disney World, I do believe.
Well, I think that the landfills are rivaling that.
But
I think you're right.
So you had fun. So how long were you in Montana for?
It was just a couple of days. I flew in like on a it takes forever to get there from Florida because of all the connections. There's no direct to really anything in Montana. So it was three planes to get there. So I was there Wednesday and I left on Friday. So, you know, but it was really nice and clear, beautiful travel days. So flying over, you know, taking off, and I flew into Salt Lake City for one of my connections, and that was always nice, and then flying back to Atlanta. So it was a long, long travel days. I spent more time in the planes than I did, in the airplanes that I did on my appointment.
I could imagine, yeah. Now, what type of rental car did it? Was it a 4x4?
No, well, this is the thing, is that I tried to get a rental car when online and everything was booked up. And when I got there, when I arrived into the airport at Glacier International, I saw there was a Hertz desk, and I'm a Hertz Gold member and everything. So I just walked up and I said, well, do you have any cars? And of course they said, well, we do have 4x4s. And I said, okay. And they said, we also have a Subaru Legacy. And I said, okay, well, you know, I just need it for a couple of days. And they said, oh, and I said, well, why was it sold out online? He said, well, because of the wildfires that occur occasionally later in the season, people are coming earlier in the season. And she said, everything has just been sold out. And people have been starting like the end of mid-May is that they've started coming, which is a lot earlier. And he said, it's just been really just, we're in the thick of it now. And I said, oh, because I was just going to try and get an Uber. And he said, yeah, you probably wouldn't have because there are so many people here that it's a good thing. And even the hotel room that I got was one of the last hotel rooms. So I did have a Subaru Legacy, which was a very nice car. But yeah, they had that or a 4x4. And I said, I'll take the Legacy.
That's right. Well, another exciting trip over. Now, where do you go next?
So we will be next week. We will be in New Orleans for the National Auctioneers Association Convention for the conference. So we'll be doing that. I am teaching some classes. Greg and I will be attending some things. We're also working on the International Auctioneer Competition. Greg and I will be working on that. I'll be one of the hosts for the webcast that we're doing for that, which is live. And I'll put out a link to that on our Facebook page so people can watch it throughout the day and watch the competition. And like I said, I'll be one of the hosts and Greg will be helping behind the scenes, corralling people in for interviews and making sure that everything runs smoothly and helping out all of our colleagues there with the NAA. So we're looking forward to that. But we'll be there all next week.
All right. Now, how did Greg do on his test?
He's taking that after conference. Okay. So he, you know, he realized that there was a lot going on and he's getting it all set up. I think it will be later in July that he's taking the test. He's been studying.
He's been doing really well. He sounded a little nervous talking about it, though.
Well, you know what, it's that whole thing of test. Yeah. And he's like, I know this. And I said, I know you do. But he said, but, you know, you freeze up. And I said, you just have to. And being an instructor with the NAA and the ISA, the International Society of Appraisers, I always tell people, just read the questions. You know it. Read it through and take your time. Don't just rush through because once you start rushing through, that's when you start making mistakes. And He'll be fine.
See, I didn't want to tell him to weigh it when I would. The SAT test and the PSATs were very important when I was in school, and I never really geared up for tests. Do you know what I mean? I never did extra study for tests. I just took. I always perform better on those tests than I did in regular schoolwork because I just couldn't get hyped up to do extra studying for them. I figured if I didn't learn what I needed to learn, then I'm going to have to take the test over again is basically what I said to myself.
Right. And you take the pressure off yourself. Yeah. And that's really what it is that you have another opportunity. So if it doesn't work out the first time, I'll take it the second time. So just go in. Do your best, you know, but that's where you can't freak out. And a lot of people to get really hyped up about, oh, there's a test. Even when I teach the USPAP class, the 15-hour, and it's 50 questions, and everyone gets so freaked out about the 50 questions. What's on? Said it's all multiple choice. Just read the questions. Just take your time. Read the questions. And you're going to know the answers because we're going to be reviewing it. So, and a lot of it's common sense, but people just get they freeze up, and as soon as they start freezing up, the brain stops.
All over, yeah. All right, well, we will check with you guys next week and give our best to Greg.
Definitely. And happy 4th of July. Enjoy your weekend.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. That is Tim Luke minus Greg Schramm with the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack and Appraise This.